I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The FT.
Now, in terms of the capital ratios of individual banks after the application of this stress test, we have seven banks that would now, if the stress materialized, would be under the 6% threshold that we used as a benchmark. And the capital shortfall to reach the 6% threshold would amount to $3.5 billion.
That was Chairman of the Committee of European Banking Supervisors Giovanni Carozio talking on Friday when the results of the much-awaited European bank stress tests were announced. We'll be talking about this and all the implications of Friday's results in this week's special Stress Test Banking Weekly with me, Patrick Jenkins. I'm joined in the studio by David Oakley, the FT's capital markets correspondent. Later in the show, we hear also from José Manuel Campa, the Secretary of State for Economic Affairs in the Spanish government, also about the stress test results.
This has been an exercise that we were very keen on having, that we have made a big effort in trying to provide information. And I think that information, the markets will find it useful. Some of the initial feedback that we've gotten already suggest that they do find it useful. And that's very important.
But first, we should start by summing up what was revealed in the results. So 91 banks were stress tested. The results were announced, as we say, on last Friday. Seven of the banks failed, although there were no properly listed entities. Five of them were Spanish cajas or savings banks, the regional public sector banks. There was one German bank, Hypo Real Estate, which has already been nationalised, and there was ATE, the part state-owned Greek bank, all of which were no surprises among those, really. But I suppose the big surprise was there weren't more failures. David, what do you think has been really the market reaction so far to the outcome of those stress tests?
I mean, the market reaction has been surprisingly muted. The equities and bonds have both traded fairly steadily. I think, in a sense, the market has almost moved on beyond the stress tests. There was this very, very big build-up to it all. And
that was reflected, really, in the market's performance over the past couple of weeks. There had kind of been expectations that these were going to boost sentiment.
The expectation was that these stress tests were a sort of a turning point for the market, and particularly on the government bonds, the Eurozone government bonds, the peripheral government bonds, has traded very steadily, and actually a lot of investors have said, well, this may be the turning point for the crisis. And in the end, there were critics of the stress test, particularly over only seven failing, but at the same time, there was quite a lot of confidence or a lot of positive reaction from the fact that they did seem to be quite demanding on the macroeconomic front, even if it wasn't so demanding on the sovereign default front.
Yeah, so let's just remind our listeners on those two sides of things. The macroeconomic measures that were applied, the stresses that were applied to banks' exposures, were quite complicated, factoring in different parameters around GDP declines, unemployment increases, and so on. The market doesn't seem to be, or analysts don't seem to be, agreed on relatively how harsh those were relative to the US stress tests that had been vaunted so much as having played a role in reviving sentiment in the US banking sector last year. I know that the Committee of European Banking Supervisors, which organised these tests here, were trumpeting the severity of the stress here as having been much worse, three times as severe, they said, as the US tests. I saw some analyst notes this morning saying actually it's the reverse. The average stress on the European portfolios was about 3.5% compared to about 9% under the US scenario. So, but you're saying the market generally accepts that they were pretty severe.
I think the market accepts that they were severe enough on the macroeconomic front. Mm. So the criticism is that most of the banks now have their sovereign bonds on the banking books, which aren't included in the tests.
So it's only the trading books of these banks that are being stress tested.
Exactly.
And that's a tiny minority, really, of all these holdings.
Exactly. And that has been a big criticism. However, interestingly, it hasn't actually affected the markets too much, because I think partly the markets were not expecting the trading books to be included, and markets tend to react on surprise.
Yeah.
And so because they were expecting this, the markets, whether it's bonds or whether it's equities or whether it was CDS prices, have traded fairly steadily.
Right.
And ultimately, I think the other factor, and this is a very key factor, is that the stress tests were the big story 2 or 3 weeks ago. But as we came closer to the publication, the markets have started to look beyond the stress tests and looking at US corporate earnings, look at US economic data. And in fact, the direction of the markets is now being taken more from those from the US than it is from Europe and the Eurozone. And I think that has meant that actually, in the event of the stress tests, the markets haven't reacted in a big way. And in fact, it's been not a damp squib, but it certainly hasn't seen the volatility that some feared.
Now, alongside the actual stress tests themselves, SEBS was very proud of the fact that they'd persuaded all the banks in Europe, these 91 banks, via their national regulators, to publish full details of their sovereign debt exposures. So even if they only stress tested a small portion of it via the trading books of the banks, they actually persuaded the banks to publish full details of their holdings. And indeed, virtually everybody did that. I think 85 of the 91 actually did that. There were 6 that didn't, and they were all German.
That is actually quite significant, and it's not actually uncoincidental that Deutsche Bank, one of the banks that did not reveal their sovereign debt, did not disclose their sovereign debt, is in fact one of the worst trading banks today. In fact, last time I looked at the prices on the markets, it was actually the worst trading bank today in Europe. That is going against the German banks. I think actually sometimes in the case of markets, transparency is more important than anything else. And even if banks reveal high levels of sovereign debt exposure, that is actually seen as a better thing than actually hiding it.
It'll be interesting to see what Deutsche Bank, they've got results out tomorrow, whether they actually backtrack on this stance.
I think there will be a lot of pressure on them to actually backtrack or actually reveal something, because this is a very big bank in Europe. They should really be taking a lead. And I think there has been quite a lot of criticism from markets and analysts that they haven't actually shown by example and actually revealed exactly what they have on their books. Certainly come under a lot of pressure to reveal that.
Basically, they've taken the story away from the centre of attention that's been dominant throughout this exercise, which has been really on the Spanish side. As we were saying earlier in the programme, we spoke earlier this morning to José Manuel Campa, the Secretary of State for Economic Affairs in the Spanish government. He's basically been the Spanish government's spokesman on this whole issue of the bank stress test exercise, and also a real advocate of Spain in the international markets. I started off by asking him, did he think the test will work in terms of reviving the confidence in the markets?
I think to a high degree it has already worked from our point of view, because it's been an exercise that we were very keen on having, that we have made a big effort in trying to provide information. And I think that information, the markets will find it useful. Some of the initial feedback that we've gotten already suggests that they do find it useful. And that's very important, you know, because the information from us and transparency is the best way to try to transmit the solvency and the actual situation of the system overall.
That's the kind of informal feedback you've had so far, but I guess the proof will really be in what happens in the markets, both to a degree in the equity markets for those listed banks that are being focused on, but also far more importantly in the funding markets, in the interbank lending markets, which had largely frozen up for a lot of Spanish banks in recent months.
That's absolutely right. You know, we have slightly above the 50% of our banking system, which is the savings banks, which they basically are not traded on equity markets, but they do participate in banking markets. And that's very important that they have, that markets have the information from these institutions so that the markets can work properly and that borrowing and lending happens in a more or less, you know, uneventful way. And it allows our financing in the economy overall.
Chris Giles, our economics editor, is with us today as well. Do you hold out as much hope as Mr. Campa does?
I think I hold out quite a lot of hope that the disclosure helps to free up some of the problems in the funding market. I mean, that's exactly what it's there to do. There's been a lot of disclosure, so at least the market should be able to differentiate between banks they want to lend to and banks they don't want to lend to. But I do think we have to look at the US. Their stress tests last May were judged by almost everyone to have been extremely successful. And they have freed up the funding markets in the US, quite significantly, but it hasn't freed up lending of banking. So Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, has been very open and very honest, saying it, in that respect, they haven't worked. So maybe the wider implications of the stress test to the national economy might be slightly exaggerated.
Do you concede that point, or do you think this is the solution to all of Spain's economic problems?
No, it's absolutely not the solution to all of Spain's economic problems, but it's only one step in the right direction. We have made major changes just purely on the financial sector, and I would like to highlight two. One is the process of integration that's taking place within the savings bank, but more important also restructuring, in which, you know, we have 45 institutions. Of these, 39 have been involved in different merger transactions.
These are the so-called cajas.
That's the cajas.
Public sector savings banks, basically.
That's right. Savings banks that are primarily held and managed by regional governments, local governments, and other parts of the regional economies.
What will happen ultimately to the cajas that failed this test? Of the 91 banks that were stress tested across Europe, 5 of those institutions were Spanish, all cajas. Their future obviously hangs to an extent in the balance. What will happen?
Well, I think one of the key points, as I mentioned, this was just one of the steps. One of the key points that we have also addressed is we changed the law governing these cajas to allow them to be able to raise, to have better instruments to raise equity in capital markets, so now they can choose to issue what we call participatory shares with full voting rights within their current structure, or they can choose to transfer their assets to a regular bank that will issue equity. And to some extent, this again has been a successful, like one of the 5 institutions that show a lack of sufficient capital to reach the 6% target. Banca Cívica announced already last Friday that they were engaging in a deal with private investors to actually bring forward 450 million euros of what would qualify as Tier 1 capital. So that's one clear example in which this is already working in the direction that we're hoping to.
Interesting that J.C. Flowers was the investor, the U.S. specialist, if you like, in troubled banks, was the one to back that transaction. Do you expect funds like that to get more involved in the caja sector?
I don't know what kind of investors will go forward, but I do think it's obviously important that to the extent that there are specialized investors, and I think it's interesting that somebody that had the experience already to, had made a number of transactions and equity investments in restructuring banks is willing to look at this sector, suggests that there are obviously good opportunities there for investors, for private investors.
There, Mr. Camper was outlining the opportunities for private investors to get into the caja sector. Maybe no coincidence that the Association of Cajas was in London early on Monday and is moving then across Europe on a roadshow to try and drum up investment interest in both, in the debt side of the cajas, but potentially in the equity investment side as well, now that they've been freed up legally to take on equity. David, do you think that's likely to lead to much active interest from international investors?
I think it's going to take a while before the wholesale markets regain confidence in the Spanish banks, but it's certainly a starting point. The wholesale markets are still closed to most Spanish banks, except for the big ones, BBVA and Santander. But I think a lot of investors have told me this morning that one thing that differentiates Spain from Germany is that the Spanish seem to have grasped the nettle in the sense of transparency and revealing what is on these books. And they seem to have been taking very positive and quite aggressive steps in a way that the Germans haven't. And I think in a sense, the Spanish have drawn a lot of plaudits from this, whereas some of the German banks have not done so.
It's an ironic result in some senses, because the relative strength of the German banks is obviously, or at least the listed ones, is that much greater than many of the Spanish.
This is it. I mean, Germany is the big economy, the strong economy. Spain has been the economy that's been in the spotlight the last 3 weeks, and in fact has really been the economy that everybody says is the making or breaking of the Eurozone. And it has been the Spanish that have taken leadership. Well, one investor said to me this morning, the Spanish, he in his view, had taken leadership in a way that the Germans hadn't. And that can only do the Spanish a lot of good. And even if some of these banks are exposed to property and have weak balance sheets, at least it shows that the government, the banks themselves, are trying to address this problem. And that always wins favour in the markets.
Well, I guess we'll be watching here over the next couple of weeks very closely to see, firstly, how the banks manage to refinance themselves in the markets, how much appetite there is in the market for issuance of medium-term Spanish bank paper, and also maybe the outcome of this roadshow that the Cajas are on this week. I think that probably concludes what we can say about the stress test exercise thus far. We'll continue monitoring it as we go on, but as you heard from Mr. Camper and from our commentators today, this has been an exercise that's certainly divided a lot of opinion and maybe ended up with some counter to expectations results that have thrown some investors, certainly. We'll be watching out later for this week for more news on that exercise, particularly the Caja Roadshow, also for the results from several of Europe's banks, UBS and Credit Suisse among them, before next week moving on to the UK bank results. In the meantime, all that's left for me to do is to thank Mr. Camper for sparing his time this morning, and to you, David, for joining me in the studio, and thank you for listening. Banking Weekly was produced by LJ Filotrani. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.